mesmo paciente, não vai me cortar. Já que sou sonhista, não tenho sonhos, e eu venho bem. Felice que tenha uma vista, não está aqui, então vem aqui, trai, sai, não está pela manhã, de dati salto, dati canto. Man se kochtu mir das Chat, ich bin in der Nähe in der Chat, ich gehe zum Platz. Ein bisschen rein, das ist gut. Oder dann ich kurz sagen, nein, das ist jetzt in die Lage, das geht nicht. Yama, I tried to ascertain the position of Krishna by use of his own intelligence, by use of his own potency, by the use of his own power. And he ended up bewildered. And how Krishna bewildered him, or he himself bewildered himself, in one sense, by his attempt, and ended up causing him bewilderment, has been described how Brahma took away the boys and the calves after seeing the wonderful picnic that Krishna was having with the boys and the calves and playing in such a spontaneous way. Brahma took away the boys and the calves. Krishna expanded himself into so many other boys and calves, each having the exact characteristic of the other boys and calves, the original boys and calves. And then Krishna went on for 1 year in the form of the calves and the boys, exchanging love with the residents of Vrindavan, specifically the cowherd ladies and men, who now had Krishna as their son, and the calves, who were Krishna, exchanging love with the cows, who now had Krishna as their son. But yet Krishna's position as Yasoda Nandana, as Nandana was, he was still the object of everyone's love and affection, even though they had the expansions of Krishna, the cows and the parents had the expansion of Krishna as the child, still as long as Krishna was the object of their love. So then Brahma came back and he wanted to see how Krishna would react to this unique occurrence where he had taken the boys and cows away. And he came back and he saw, because Krishna had expanded himself into the boys and calves, that the boys and calves were exactly as they were before. So he was bewildered. But wait a second, I took them, maybe Krishna has gotten them back. So he went to where the boys and calves were hidden, and the boys were still there. So he thought, is Krishna moving them back and forth? Is I'm going back and forth? So he raced back. And he saw that the boys and calves were still there. So the result of that was that he became extremely confused. How is this going on? Which are the actual boys and calves? It seems to be several sets here. Which are actually the ones? So then Krishna started to reveal his potency. And this begins on text 45, when we read some of the aspects of Krishna that Krishna revealed to Brahma. Brahma actually couldn't pierce into Krishna's position by his own power, even though he's four-headed Lord Brahma, Tata Mukh, Lord Brahma, and the chief engineer, as Prabhupada once called him, of the universe still. He couldn't pierce with his great intelligence into the position of Krishna, and Krishna began revealing himself. So, in text 44, which we've already read, Brahma wanted to trick Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who could never be mystified, but who on the contrary mystifies the entire universe. In what sense does Krishna mystify the entire universe? He puts everyone under the control of his illusory potency, which has so much effect, and the primary effect of course, is that everyone identifies yourself with the body, even though Bhagavad Gita teaches, and we experience it to different degrees, that we ourselves don't change, and the body is continuously changing, still we consider the body as a self, which is as foolish as considering the cloth, clothes that cover our body to be ourselves. So, by Brahma's attempt to bewilder Krishna, he became bewildered, he became confused, and the example that's given in the 45th verse, as the darkness of snow on a dark night, and the light of a glowworm in the light of day have no value. The mystic powers of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of great power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. So two examples are given. One is when it is dark, a dark night, and it starts to snow. Does the snow make the darkness any greater? Does it cover the darkness? Does it have the potency to cover the darkness or make the darkness greater than it already is? And yes, of course, is no. In the daytime, if it starts to snow and there are great dark clouds, then it can increase the darkness. But at night, doesn't increase the darkness at all. Similarly, quite the opposite, a glowworm, a little glowworm. Do they have those in Gujarat? Glowworms?
I think so. Jugno.
In where?
Jugno.
That's what they're called?
Yeah.
Jugno.
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 It gives light.
Little bit.
Yeah, little bit.
They improve. I remember seeing some somewhere.
In Yenshit?
I don't know. But in any case, in the nighttime they appear, oh look at the, especially at dusk, the glowworms come and they give off a little bit of light. But in the daytime, a glowworm, even though it gives off light, but its light is so insignificant, then one could see the actual position of a glowworm, that it's covered by the light of the sun. Its own light is covered by the light of the sun and appears non-existent, practically speaking. So similarly, the example is given as the darkness of snow on a dark night and the light of a glowworm in the light of day have no value. The mystic power of an inferior person, a lesser person, who tries to use it against a person of great power, he tries to control or influence a person of greater power, is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. His own position is made obvious as insignificant, just as the glowworm and the snow were made insignificant by the rising of the light for the glowworm and the darkness for the snow. Its true position as insignificant was revealed. So that is the meaning of this verse. And the comparison is Brahma's own bewilderment that his position was diminished because he tried to use his potencies against Krishna's potencies, to test Krishna's potencies. So here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. When one wants to supersede a superior power, one's own inferior power becomes ludicrous. What does ludicrous mean?
Laughable.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Yes. Just as a glowworm in the daytime and snow at night have no value, Brahma's mystic power becomes worthless in the presence of Krishna. became worthless in the presence of Krishna. For greater mystic power condemns inferior mystic power. On a dark night, the darkness produced by the snow has no meaning. The glowworm appears very important at night, but in the daytime its glow has no value. Whatever little value it has is lost. Similarly, Brahma became insignificant in the presence of Krishna's mystic power. Krishna's Maya was not diminished in value, but Brahma's Maya was condemned. It was proved what it actually was, and that was insignificant. Therefore, one should not try to exhibit one's insignificant opulence before greater power. So, continuing with how Krishna revealed some his position to Brahma, who wanted to see something wonderful from Krishna. He was testing Krishna, almost poking Krishna, to see how Krishna would react to his taking the boys and the calves away. He wanted to see whether Krishna would do something wonderful, perform some great mystical feat, or he would just wander around looking, not understanding where the boys were, or he would understand that Brahma had taken the boys, or he would come to Brahma to pray that he give them back. So he wanted to see something of Krishna's potency. Thus, so Krishna began to reveal his potency. While Brahma looked on, all the calves and the boys, and the boys tending them, immediately appeared to have complexions the color of bluish rain clouds, and to be dressed in yellow silken garments. So they began to assume the form of Krishna's expansions, which they actually were, as in their Vishnu forms. So what were the colors?
Blue complexion. Like a rain cloud.
Bluish rain cloud. And they were dressed in yellow silken garments. So the color is like a bluish rain cloud, and their dress is silken garments, yellow, but not like the yellow of this world. But how else can we understand? It's a completely transcendental color. So how can the mundane mind, our mind that's filled with finite material conceptions and experience, how can it understand the actual color of that Krishna was dressed in. So this is to give us an idea that we sometimes say gold, or what's the other example?
Golden.
What's the other example? Bijli.
Lightning.
Yes. Flash of lightning. Mm-hmm. All these, well, Brahma was contemplating, he was trying to understand which calves were real, which boys were real, which were which. And as he was bewildered, while he was contemplating, all the calves and boys immediately transformed into Vishnu murtis, having bluish complexions and wearing yellow garments. Brahma was contemplating his own power, and he was contemplating Krishna's the situation with his power and the immense, unlimited power of Krishna. But before he could come to a conclusion, he saw this immediate transformation. All those, here's the next two verses, what he saw. So Krishna began to reveal to Brahma a glimpse, he allowed Brahma a glimpse of his position, of his potency, in comparison to Brahma's own potency. All those personalities had four arms, holding conch shells, disc, mace, and
lotus
flower in their hands. They wore helmets on their heads, and on their ears were earrings, and garlands of forest flowers around their necks. On the upper portion of the right side of their chest was the emblem of the goddess of fortune, which is the hair that on the right side that goes in the right direction, which indicates that this is because there are other inhabitants of Vaikuntha that look, practically speaking, exactly the same of the Lord, but the differentiating sign, of course the Lord is the source of everyone, but the visible differentiating sign is the Srivatsa curl of hair on the right hand side of the Lord's chest. So all of these had the Srivatsa sign, all these Vishnu forms. So what did that mean? Each and every one of them was the Lord. They weren't like Vishnu Dutas or anything like that. Each and every one of them was the Lord. The chest was the emblem of the goddess of fortune. Furthermore, they wore armlets on their arms of jewels tied with string. The Kastuba gem around their necks was remarked with the three lines like a concha, and their necks which were marked with the three lines like a concha, and bracelets on the wrist, that's where the jewels were, with bangles on their ankles, ornaments on their feet, and sacred belts around their waist. Kati Sutra and Guri Yakai. It's not clear what he said unless it's going to be described. What these sacred belts were made out of. Their waist, they all appeared to be beautiful. All the Vishnu forms had forearms with conch shell and other articles, but these characteristics are also possessed by those who have attained Sarupi Mukti in Vaikuntha, and who consequently have forms exactly like the forms of the Lord. However, these Vishnu forms appearing before Lord Brahma also possess the mark of Shiva and the Kastuba gem, which are the special characteristics possessed only by the Supreme Lord Himself. This proves that all these boys and calves are in fact directly expansions of Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, not merely His associates of Vaikuntha. Vishnu Himself is included within Krishna. All the opulences of Krishna are already present in Vishnu. All the opulences of Vishnu are already present in Krishna. And consequently, for Krishna to demonstrate so many Vishnu forms was actually not very astonishing, because all the Vishnus come from Krishna. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Sarvabhuta.
So how would it have been that the mothers and the calves would have been feeling the extra special love that they feel for Krishna if these were Vishnu expansions?
But they felt extra love for Krishna because these were angas, and Krishna is the source of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the potency of Lord Vishnu is like trivial or anything like that. He's the Supreme Lord.
Would it also be that
there's special characteristics that Krishna has?
Would it also
and also there's Vaikuntha expansions of Krishna too. Yes.
That's helpful. I was wondering, would it also have anything to do with the fact that Lord Brahma worships Vishnu?
He saw
Vishnu.
It's not what he saw. It's what Krishna revealed.
Yeah, he revealed him.
Because Brahma is the Brahma of a particular universe. So he naturally, and you see this in the prayers of the demigods. And when Prithu Maharaj is being worshipped, or when they speak individually in that particular case, and and Sagadevas being worshipped. Everyone will worship the Lord according to their own mentality, according to their own vision, have a special relationship and understanding of the Lord according to almost what they appreciate is supreme. So if you're a universal administrator, you'd see him as the supreme universal administrator, because he's all the power is coming from him, from the administration. So naturally they relate to Krishna's supreme position in that way. And that's specifically what Brahma was having trouble understanding, that Krishna, that the supreme position of Krishna is not diminished when he's acting like a cowherd boy, playing in the caves and friends in Vrindavan, no matter how spontaneous and cowherd boy-like their activities are, he's still the supreme Lord, and he's still the universal controller, and he's so much the universal controller that so many universes are being controlled by him, so many universes are being destroyed by him, so many universes are being maintained by him, and still he's acting as a cowherd boy. So for Krishna, because all these Vishnus are within the inconceivably potent form of Krishna, then it wasn't very astonishing for the expansion to manifest it. No. Because for us to understand what unlimited, inconceivably unlimited power is, we can't understand it. So this is not a complete manifestation of Krishna's power. So see, sometimes we're asked to do something and we manifest all our ability to do it, our strength or our wealth or our influence, and then that's it, we don't have any more. But Krishna always has unlimited more. Whatever he does, his potencies never diminish. That's inconceivable. He has unlimited potencies. That's what, and Prabhupada may quote it here, but often quoted in Srinidhi Goswami. He describes the Paramishwana in that way, that unless you accept that he has inconceivable potency, there's no meaning to the great concept of God. And the last, a little more in the description of Sri Vatsa Prabhupada's purport. The Sri Vatsa mark is described by the Vaishnava Toshini as being a curl of fine yellow hair on the upper portion of the right side of the Lord's chest. The mark is not for ordinary devotees, it is a special mark of Vishnu or Krishna. Text 49. More of the description of these Vishnu forms. Every part of their body, from the feet to the top of their heads. So this, your mind's eye, envision their bodies as described with the forearms very beautiful, decorated with helmets and armlets and bracelets and necklaces and ankle bells and garlands of forest flowers, and their complexion is and their dhoti is and their belt, sacred belt. What color is Krishna's belt?
Red.
Why?
Attract Srimati Radharani.
Gesture, Srimati Radharani affects him. So, every part of their bodies, in addition to these ornaments and the complexion, from their feet to the top of their heads, from the tips of their toes to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves. offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. The word buri, punyavad, arpita, arpitai, is significant in this verse. These forms of Vishnu worship, that's the last line of the verse, buri, komala, savagateshu, the very angri, mastakam, apunas, completely decorated from the top, from the feet to the top of the head, tosi, nava, damavi. Fresh garments, tulsi leaves. Komalai sarvagatreshu, very soft, tender. All the limbs of the Lord, sarvagatreshu, puri punyavad arpita, that were offered by devotees engaged in the greatest pious activities, namely hearing, worshipping the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on. The word buri punyavad arpitai is significant in this verse. These forms of Vishnu were worshipped by those who have performed pious activities sukritabhi for many births and were constantly engaged in devotional service, shravanam, kirtan, Vishnu. Bhakti, devotional service, is the engagement of those who have performed highly developed pious activities. The accumulation of pious activities has already been mentioned elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam. 10, 12, 11, where Sukadeva Goswami says, Itam satam brahmasukhana bhutya tasyam gatanam paradayavatvena mayashritananam narapangavena sakyam vicharu pitapunja bunja. Those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of God and His Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship, as Calvin points. Birth after birth, performing pious activities. And then the last line, in our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there was a tamal tree that covers an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was lying neglected, but now it has developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of buddhi punya, of piety. The implication was that it was nourished by hearing and sense. More on the description of these forms. So what was the last description?
Blue complexion.
That was the first description. What was the last description?
From the tip of the tongue to the top of the head, the Lord is decorated with tulsi leaves.
Very fresh.
Tulsi leaves. The leaves are garlands.
Prabhupada's translation says garlands. Tender garlands of tulsi leaves. So the both tender garlands of tulsi leaves. In Sanskrit is tulsi nava. Another means they're fresh. Dhamabhi.
From people who had worshipped.
Yeah. Because everyone was worshipping them. Pious. Yeah, those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, some more descriptions of them, which resemble the increasing light of the moon, and by their sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, they created and protected the desires of their own devotees as if by the modes of passion and goodness. Interesting verse. So what protected the devotees?
One smile.
Yes, smile and one other thing?
Glances.
Huh?
Glances.
There's glance. But not only ordinary glances. Sarva arun means their eyes were reddish. And apanga lukshitai. Apanga means
without
on the side, not direct. So this protected the devotees. Now how? It protected the desires of their own devotees. As if by the mode of passion and goodness. Who would like to say something about the meaning of that? How did it protect the devotees? How did it protect their desires? Because it attracted them. As if, just like ordinary people in this world become attracted by the smile, those are the two things.
As if by the modes of passion and goodness.
As if by the modes of passion and goodness. In this world, people become attracted by the smiling and the eyes. Someone looks, become attracted by it. As if passion and goodness are influencing. But on this level, it influences, but on a spiritual level, it's as if it was. But that's how the desire. Because to become attracted, increasingly more attracted to Krishna is the object, and it protects one from becoming attached or attracted to the objects of this world. So, what? Those Vishnu forms bless the devotees with their clear glances and smiles, which resemble the increasingly full light of the moon, Jaya Karai Vitandika Vataranam. As maintainers, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling. Their smiles resembled the mode of goodness, protecting all the desires of the devotees, and the glancing of their eyes resembled the mode of passion. Actually, in this verse, the word raja means not passion, but affection. In the material world, rajagun is passion, but in the spiritual world, it is affection. In the material world, affection is contaminated by rajagun and tamagun, but in the sugha-sattva, the affection that maintains the devotees is transcendental. The word svakartanam refers to great desires. As mentioned in this verse, the glance of Lord Vishnu creates the desires of the devotees. A pure devotee, however, has no desires. Therefore, Sri Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glance creates variegated desires in relationship to Krishna and devotional service. In the material world, desire is a product of rajagun and tamagun, but desires in the spiritual world give rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. Thus the word svakartanam refers to eagerness to serve Krishna. In Vrindavan there was a place where there was no temple, but a devotee desired that there be a temple and save a devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage, such as the desires of a devotee. So which devotee desired in that way? The author of the Bhaktivedanta Purport in the Prabhupada. So that was a transcendental desire that came about by the glance of Krishna. Any questions or comments at this point?
The last part we were talking about the devotees, was that in a kind of a generic way? Because there were no other devotees present, right? There was only Krishna and Brahma and... When it was talking about the glance protects the devotees or glanced on the devotees, there were no other devotees present at this time, is that correct? For this Leela, during this Leela. Because all the boys and cows were Krishna's friends. So is that just a general statement?
Yeah, that's a general statement. Glory. Well, so many other devotees were present.
The trees and...
The birds.
Yeah, that's true.
And the grass.
Mm.
And the rivers.
Mm.
River.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
A couple of thoughts I was having. One was that it's quite amazing that the Krishna's potency, he arranged that Vishnu expansions exhibited the qualities and nature exactly like personalities in the Dharma. Quite amazing. Never thought of it that way, that the Vishnu expansions, but yeah. By the arrangement, they were included.
But still more amazing is that Balade missed the boys, even though he was associating with Krishna. Krishna didn't even let him go. Balade, he may be wounded. That she covered Baladev's ability to see that, otherwise he would have missed it. Sridham and Sudham and Stokhism. The camps. Quite amazing.
Now, the thing that really struck me there was that this transformation took place right before Bhagavan's eyes. Quite extraordinary.
Right before his eyes.
The boys and calves transformed.
And then they get, and later on, they'll transform back to.
Wow.
Well, that's what Brahma thought. This is the most extraordinary thing I've ever seen. I mean, these people, I don't know if I can say it, but maybe like four heads and four arms. And what is this? Also, what Prabhupada said, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage, such as the desires of the devotee. When Prabhupada wrote this in 1977, that's before his departure from this world. Yeah. There were some devotees that come.
Mm-hmm.
But now, that's a place of pilgrimage. Everyone. Everyone must come and see. Now this is what else he saw. So what was the last thing he saw? That the forms were being worshipped. Excuse me. Were covered by tulsi. There's more. All beings, both moving and non-moving, Atmaradis, Stamba, Payantaya, from Lord Brahma to the insignificant living entities, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entities. So all beings, the moving, the non-moving, the most significant to the least significant, had taken forms, who had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnumurtis according to their respective capacities with various means of worship such as dancing and singing. Hmm. support. Innumerable living entities are engaged in different types of worship of the Supreme, according to their abilities and karma. But everyone is engaged. There is no one who is not serving. So some serve directly, and some serve indirectly by serving Krishna's Maya Shakti. But everyone must serve. Therefore, the Mahabhagavata, the topmost devotee, sees everyone as being engaged in the service of Krishna. Even if he sees all direct, and he sees that he himself isn't. Only himself does he see as not engaged. We have to elevate ourselves from a lower position to a higher position, and the topmost position is that of direct service
to Vrindavan.
But everyone is engaged in service. Denial of the service of the Lord is Maya. So everyone in this world, as we already know, is in denial. They say that, and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, they came up with a funny saying. And they say, everyone, we say, you're in denial, but they say, denial isn't the river in Egypt. Denial ain't the river in Egypt. They say it in the book of action.
Denial ain't the river in Egypt.
It doesn't work if you're from India. Denial. Denial.
Denial.
There's a river in Egypt called the Nile River.
The Nile.
Do you know that?
Yes.
Like
some
Nelly.
People can't say TH, they say D.
Especially people from Brooklyn, New York.
Denial.
Denial. Denial ain't, because they don't speak proper English, so instead of saying isn't, they say ain't. Denial ain't the river in Egypt. It means denial is something else. Denial that we end up serving. We want to be the master, but we end up serving. Everyone is in denial about this. Denial of the service of the Lord is Maya. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Asava Vritya Nariyati Natsaya Sateshi Karini Vritya. Vritya. Only Krishna is the Supreme Master and all others are his servants. As Krishna desires, everyone dances according to his tune. Either directly or indirectly, either dancing according to the melodies produced by Krishna's Maya Shakti, or dancing according to the melodies produced by his Bhansi. There are two kinds of living entities, the moving and the non-moving. Trees, for example, stand in one place, whereas ants move. Brahma saw that all of them, down to the smallest creatures, had assumed different forms and were accordingly engaged in the service of Lord Vishnu. So that again is the vision of a Mahabhagavata. One receives a form according to the way one worships the Lord. In the material world, the body one receives is guided by the demigods. This is sometimes referred to as the influence of the stars. As indicated in the Bhagavad Gita 3:27, by the words Prakriti Pridhanani, according to the laws of nature, one is controlled by the demigods. All living entities are serving Krishna in different ways, but when they are Krishna conscious, their service is fully manifest. Because when we serve Krishna, fully manifest means there's nothing other than the natural consciousness of the soul is fully manifest, the natural desires of the soul are fully manifest, and the natural serving mood of the soul is fully manifest. In the material world, his desires, the service, that everyone must serve continuously, one serves. But one's desire is always exactly the opposite. Because one wants to be the master continuously and be the enjoyer. And the master mood and the servant mood are exactly the opposite, because the servant enjoys, works for the pleasure of the master. So in the material world, the serving mood is covered by the master mood, but the master mood is covered by the serving mood too. But in the spiritual world, there's only one mood. Everyone accepts Krishna as the Ekala Ishvara Bhaktya, and everyone serves him with a full heartedness. So therefore, the serving mood is completely manifest in the spiritual world. As a flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aromas and beauty, so when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. What do you think? What sense is it?
Well, indicating that the transformation to who we really are is a transformation of consciousness into service.
And then the plant, say a rose plant, rose bush. So it starts off as a seed, although no one ever sees rose seeds. Right? You don't see them, but they're there. And then the seed grows into a sprout. You don't see rose sprouts. But then it grows into a rose plant or a rose bush. And then it begins to give off its leaves. And then at some point, the leaves come into a bud. And neither the plant nor the bud nor the roots, nor the stems have a fragrance. So they're immature. The purpose of the plant, which is interesting, it's in relationship to the plant's desire. And therefore, he's taken that birth and put into the body of a rose bush because he had the desire for fragrance of some sort. Or part of the desire was manifest at that time. But it doesn't fully manifest until the rose comes and blossoms. And that's the fulfillment of the actual desire. So the comparison is, when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. We could say the beauty and the fragrance of his real form. Because when there's that moment when the rose is just fragrant and it's just opening up, it's not overly opened, and then it's manifest, soft, it's tender, it's beautiful, it's colorful, and it's fragrant. And its shape is wonderful too. So that's the actual form and purpose of the whole plant. So the purpose of the fulfillment of the plant, let's say. So the fulfillment of this, of the soul, is his Krishna consciousness, and his true beauty and fragrance will be manifest in service. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. Okay, stop here. 52 continues tomorrow. We won't be able to, maybe we'll finish this week. This is quite long purpose. I think we will finish this week. Any questions or comments? So what do you remember from the class?
Three descriptions. three descriptions of Vishnu. One was that he has a rainy bluish complexion and wearing a yellow garment.
Isn't it interesting how the first thing we spoke about stuck so strongly also into my mind? The first thing that was mentioned.
Fresh tulsi leaf garland, wearing, starting from the tip of the toe to the head, tip of the head. And his.
She couldn't be just a garland, well, because.
But how would it help?
Sandalwood pulp. And all living entities were worshipping him.
Yeah. And also his smile and the way he protects his devotees.
What was it? Smile and what else?
And a glance. A reddish eye glance.
Sidewalk glance. Oh no, later.
The smile is like gradually increasing.
What does that mean?
Waxing lines gradually increasing.
Yeah, so Krishna's smile. So it doesn't start off only and increases, and then as it increases, it brings more happiness.
Yeah.
It break, maybe I should say it breaks into a smile or something.
Yeah. You see it in this way, this one gradually increases the smile and it's an impact.
Yeah.
Also, you see how the moon gradually increases.
Yeah. It's tricking.
Yeah, it's vicious feeling. Especially when it becomes.
Purnima.
And he wears a sacred belt.
Sacred belt?
Jewels tied with strings.
And anklets?
Anklets and ornaments on his feet and on his
helmets.
Bangles?
Ankle belts. And the Sri Rats, yeah. That was left side. Isn't it on the right side?
Yeah, right side.
No, which is, yes? No, you're right. I don't know the difference between right. Which is the right side again? Good side, yeah, that was your left side.
She talked on this.
Yeah.
He's just trying to find it. Prabhupada's already telling the world to see the boys and cats there.
Yeah.
And then before it dies, they transform.
And it's before.
What's coming? What emotions will you feel?
Well, he's going to express them later.
Yeah.
But complete awe and reverence, that's one thing. Experience.
Astonishment.
Yes.
Brahma's mystic power became insignificant in front of Krishna's.
And what two examples were given?
The example of darkness of the snow and the glowing moon, the moon.
Have you ever seen a glow?
Back in India, I think. I have. But I don't know if it's glow or is something else in my upper. It was close to. So we were at night.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's global or it's a leaf.
Oh, what? What else would it be?
Flowing under a tree.
Mm-hmm.
A picture.
Mm-hmm.
Is that global? That's in English.
There's lots of them in New Zealand. In the bush.
Called kiwi worms. They're selling them all over the world. alternative energy there to do.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. Thank you. Prabhupada ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.